It started getting terrible when I was about 22, 23. My first symptoms were 19. I'm 37 now. And then I nearly passed in December of 2014.
In this podcast episode, I talk to Dane Johnson, CEO of Crohn's Colitis Lifestyle, about how he became the success he is today. Dad Mind Matters, helping men to safely navigate family life without losing their minds. Lived experience podcasts about mental health, parenting and marriage on a Monday, Wednesday and Friday.
Thanks so much for having me on the show, James.
Mate, it's absolutely my pleasure. And thank you so much for putting up with, like, literally it was the perfect storm of, I had my 5-year-old rolling dumbbells across the floor, the dog barking, wanting to be let out. I just thought, he can't write this stuff. It's just, just leave me alone. What do you want? Children are very, very, very selfish. Understandably, I get it. It's an evolutionary thing, but it's like, come on.
We made it through, though. We're here and just made it happen. And yeah, I'm thankful to be there. And anyone who, I'm sure you're just getting introduced to me. My name is Dane Johnson. I'm a board-certified nutritionist. I'm the CEO of Crohn's Colitis Lifestyle. I had a life-threatening case of what was first ulcerative colitis and then Crohn's disease. Then the doctors couldn't make up their mind. Right. And it eventually turned into a life-threatening case where I was 122 pounds. I was on Entyvio, methotrexate, multiple antibiotics, taking prednisone like Skittles on and off for years. I had to go on a TPN feeding tube. I had to go on an antiviral chemotherapy. I failed a lot of drugs, a lot of medications. And I would have 20 to 25 bloody bowel movements a day, 5 or 6 at night for months and months. I think it was like one stretch was 8 months. I didn't sleep through the night without using a restroom.
That must have been terrifying.
It was not only terrifying, it was like, you ever been on imagine a ride that was just absolutely dreadful, but it didn't stop. And then you're yelling at your parents and the doctor, like, take me off.
How old were you when you were going through this?
It started getting terrible when I was about 22, 23. My first symptoms were 19. I'm 37 now. And then I nearly passed in December of 2014. And that was, so that was 10 years ago. So 27. I turned 20. My birthday's in November. So it was on my 27th birthday.
Okay.
Hooked up to those machines. They would have these these electrical massage things on my legs to try to keep them mobile because I was sitting in a bed.
Atrophy, I suppose, is of your muscles.
Exactly. And it really didn't work. I mean, when you lose that much weight, I'm about 190 right now. And so when you drop to 122 pounds that quick, I lost about, 50, 60 pounds in about a month or maybe a longer 6-7 weeks. The pain was terrible. Also in that time, I was on 3 grams of Dilaudid. If anyone knows what Dilaudid is, it's 7 times stronger than morphine. You ever been on morphine?
No, but that's basically
medical jumping
heroin,
from cloud to cloud.
Really?
Yep, legal heroin. You're jumping from cloud to cloud, and it's 7 times stronger than that. And I remember a doctor telling me that. I was like, oh man, I don't know if this morphine's working. I'm still in pain. She goes, we're going to move you to Dilaudid. I said, what's that? She goes, 7X. I was like, okay, here we go. And then when I was even dying, I remember thinking, this isn't so bad. It
really?
Was terrible. But I remember these moments of, like, in the first 2 weeks before I got that severe, because I was going down and down and down and down. I was in the hospital in a bed for over a month. Imagine just sitting in a bed 30, 34 days or something like this, and you're just getting worse and worse. And wait for the prednisone to kick in. Wait for the antibiotics to kick in. Wait for more labs to kick in. Let's put you on a feeding tube, see if that helps. Let's up the doses of these products. And we couldn't figure it out. And then I checked myself out of that hospital because obviously the chemotherapy is what saved my life, the antiviral. But I checked myself out. I called my naturopath professor because I was in natural medicine school at the time. So by the time I was 27, I had already decided that I wanted to commit to changing my life, changing my reality of what is normal, getting uncomfortable to reset the paradigm of what is truth, what is healthy, what is normal, how do I live, how do I want to feel. And so I think that's that decision before I got chronically sick really helped me because I already had a road open. So when I'm sitting there and the doctor's going, it's time to take out your colon. So they wanted to cut out my entire colon, attach a stoma bag, then wait usually 6 months and then sew back basically a part of my GI tract to the anus. And then if that worked, I would go to the bathroom 4, 6, 7 times a day or for the rest of my life with certain issues. But That was the deal. Cut out the colon, stay on biologics for the rest of my life. And that gave me that other avenue. So today I've had no surgeries. I haven't been on a medication since 2015. No major symptoms. My lab works normal. And I've helped thousands of people around the world.
That's amazing. I mean, yeah. I suppose that sort of diagnosis at any time of your life of having to live with a bag attached, there's never a good time for that time in your life. But I'm guessing, especially as a young man in your 20s, the idea of having single. To potentially live the next 50, 60 life with, that must be incredibly hard to have to deal with.
It was so incredibly hard. I just wasn't willing to do it. I got past the point where I could even do it. I was so sick and I was so anemic that it got to a point where they said, we can't even do the surgery anymore. It might kill him. So that's how much I was traumatized by this idea. And anyone out there who's gotten these surgeries or is looking down the barrel of them, there are some cases where I go, it might just be best because the body is so severe. But there is so much we can do. And there's so much we're not discussing. And that's what I've dedicated my life to. Really believe we can do a win-win in family, in business, with marriage, with children. Is how can we all get something we really want? And what we did here is said, what if I made keeping myself healthy my job? And I just 24/7, that's what I focus on. And then I teach others who don't have that luxury to focus on it and go to school for it, and surround themselves with it and continue to try and invest in different protocols and understand the lab work, get the training. What if I helped other people do that? And that's what clicked my mind. When I went back to school for natural medicine, surrounded myself with NDs and functional medicine practitioners and started going to conferences and working in the career of holistic, functional, integrative medicine are all terms for it.
Is this hereditary or is this something, where do you think this started for you?
No, it wasn't hereditary at all for me. And that's where it got me going because the doctors and the science and the Google highlights kept talking about, oh, it's genetic. No one in my family tree had anything like this ever. And I started to get symptoms at 19. And one thing you have to understand is when there's an epidemic, and Crohn's colitis is an epidemic in its own. There were 1 million people diagnosed in the year 2000. Now it's 3-4 million that we know of, just around North America.
Okay.
That's generally speaking. Okay. Around the world, we consider to be now around 8 million. It's rising. Autoimmune disease in itself is rising drastically. If you talk to people, when I first got diagnosed, most people I'd spoke to had never even heard of these autoimmune diseases. Really not lupus, rheumatoid arthritis, multiple sclerosis, ulcerative colitis, Crohn's disease. They hadn't heard of them. Now, everyone I talk to seems to know somebody who was diagnosed with an autoimmune. There is an epidemic going on and we're seeing it in the diagnosis. And it really started around 1989 or 1990. But the big change that I want to say, and the big point of this conversation right now I want to get across is when something terrible happens to us and we suffer, we have two options. We get swallowed by the suffer or we turn it into a superpower.
Right.
I mean, look at you, James. You turn it into a superpower.
What you went through sounded like hell. My issues have always been mental health related. And certainly with being diagnosed with OCD in 2010, in some ways it actually helped to make me realize maybe this isn't just me being mental. This is me. I have actually a mental illness. I have this and I'm going to have this to varying degrees throughout my life. I won't be the only person. I always say, if you've got a problem, best thing to do is get a bigger problem. And that's very true. I might actually be able to do something about this. It's amazing what you've done and what you're doing for other people. And from what you've said, basically, you have become the template of what you show other people who have Crohn's disease, how to change it, how to improve their lifestyle, how to make it not be a bit of a life sentence in a way.
Yeah. And this is where the mental shift comes. And really, how do you change the relationship with yourself when something bad like Crohn's colitis or a mental illness comes your way? How do you change your relationship with that identity? And you have to change your relationship with what is normal. Because when you get a diagnosis and you're told you can't live like others, you can't be like others, it makes you feel like an outcast. It makes you also feel like you're made of glass. It makes you feel like God has picked you out as a voodoo doll and started stabbing you and laughing in the background. And then you go to the doctor and say, what I can do? And the doctors at the bottom line say, well, better luck next life.
Great. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, that's not what you want to hear.
See you You know, roll the dice again, maybe.
Yeah, cheers.
So that's what it felt. So when I first got sick, I had to suffer. Why did this happen to me? I was normal. How come no one else has to go through this? How come no one else is shit in their pants, bloody stools, losing weight, can't be away from a bathroom, can't eat food? Yeah. I remember screaming like, I can't eat food.
Yeah.
Stop telling me what to do, Ma. You don't understand. I can literally go right into it. I can just live in it right now.
Well, I imagine, as you said, there's a lot of anger. There's a lot of just why me?
Yeah. And what did I do to deserve this? I didn't. What did I do? That's the thing about autoimmune disease nowadays. When someone got lung cancer from 40 years of smoking, they go, oh, well, he smoked for 40 years. He drank like a fish. Yeah. There were things that we said, oh, A plus B equals C. This is not fair, especially to children. We work with sometimes 8-year-olds, 10-year-olds, 12-year-olds. This is criminal.
Yeah. When someone dies of an illness that they could have prevented, it's sad. When someone dies of something that genuinely is not their fault, it's tragic. There's just an injustice to it. Did they find a kind of a reason or?
No, James, I flew around the different hospitals. I went to any hospital that would see me. My family spent thousands, $30,000, I think, was roughly what we spent the first year with these different foods and supplements and functional doctors and chiropractic doctors and voodoo doctors and then conventional doctors and what our insurance wouldn't cover with different medications. And I was more sick after the year and I was more depressed.
Yeah.
And I was more stuck and I was more imprisoned. So, you know, doctors, and it's not the doctor's fault. That's what we have to do. Right now, if you have anger, we have to start building a reality to release the anger so we can reset with optimism, gratitude, love, excitement. Let it go. It's only hurting you. It's the only person it's hurting. The doctors can't hear you. You're chirping away.
As you said, that the answer is simple, but doing it is not. And it's
no,
because we're all emotionally driven and it's very difficult not to feel this just isn't fair. I remember my daughter saying something once that was a real light bulb moment for me, because the kids are kind of, why does it take dad so long to close the door? What is he checking that door for? My daughter's 11, so she's becoming a young lady. She's an intelligent girl. And I remember just saying to her, I just exasperated on the school run, which is all a stressful thing. I'm sorry, darling. This is, she goes, do you know what, Dad? I think you just got to own it. And I remember thinking, wow. I thought, yeah, you're right. There's no point getting cross. It doesn't help. But actually, instead of making allowances for it or trying to hide it, just throw yourself into it and say, well, do you know what? I'm going to, like you have done, I'm going to just help as many people as I can in a similar position. And that changes the dynamic hugely, I think.
It does. And here's the thing that people don't realize when you do it. It's actually selfish, because when you help others, you help yourself.
Yeah.
When I sit and I work with others, I'm also resetting my own values, conditioning the right versus wrong, learning from their cases, which helps me get better at my case or other cases I'm seeing. It's repetition. If you sit and work on anything in life, you're going to get great at it.
Yeah.
You don't need a book or you don't need a degree always to be great at something. You can just make a decision. And if you can find an excitement, something to desire, the problem is most of us, the things that we should do are things we don't want to do. So we're given the fuel of fear. Fear is a terrible fuel for creation. Fear is a terrible fuel for manifestation. Right now, everyone listening wants to create something. I wish... fill in the blank.
Yeah.
I wish I was happier. I wish I was richer. I wish I was better looking. I wish I didn't have this disease. I wish I slept better. I wish I wasn't manic. I wish that I was treated better by my significant other.
Yeah.
I wish I didn't live here. I've had all those wishes, by the way. What's the difference between reality and a wish? The energy you need to get from point A to point B is desire. So when I changed my relationship of what I had experienced, what was I going through? I was diagnosed with an incurable disease I'd have for the rest of my life. It was torturing me. And I was a young person who didn't deserve it.
Yeah.
That's what made me angry chronically year after year. That was over and over. And no one could tell me different, James. How many out there can relate with this? No one can tell you different because they're not in your shoes. They haven't gone through your pain and they just don't fucking get it. Sorry,
yeah. And I think probably the reason you're so effective at helping people is, who are you going to invest in? The person who's actually got lived experience of what you're going through, or someone who has read a book about it. There's nothing more, like, this guy does generally know how shit this is for me, because he's had his own battle. And lived experience is what works, whether it's mental or physical health.
It is. Well, you know, for me, I would have given anything. What I started working to help people, I just reverse engineered it and said, when I was suffering at my lowest, chronically depressed, fighting for my life, feeling like I'd never get out, what did I need? You're in a jail cell, chronically. Okay. I would have given anything to be able to talk to somebody who had gotten out of the jail cell.
Yeah.
Who had been in, stuck, told they'd never get out, and got out. I was actively searching for them. And I never really found someone. No. So one of the things I did is I built my team. Everyone on my team has Crohn's and colitis. So when you do a complimentary strategy session with us completely free, you're talking to someone who has IBD. Like Kelly, who was diagnosed at 14. She's 32 now. She's had multiple surgeries, but on every drug, so we helped change her life. Or Becky, who was told she had to get her colon removed in the hospital when she talked with one of my coaches and started the program in the hospital about to get her colon removed. No colon removed. Got off the biologics. She's been symptom free for over a year. Life's good. Feeling great. She lives in London. We work with people in Africa, yeah, all over Europe, all over North America, you name it.
And that's amazing. So basically, ultimately, what you're saying is the work you do stops people having to live with a colostomy bag.
It's not a guarantee. There's no guarantees in life. It's hard work many times. Each case is different. Each person is different. But we are very confident in the kind of results we get. If you come correct and you're willing to work, and there's a very good chance that we're going to be able to change your life because of certain reasons. And I just don't only want to talk about Crohn's colitis. I know there's a lot of listeners who don't have Crohn's colitis, and I want everyone to realize that success in life is very much the same no matter what you're going after. So if you want to get your health right, you want to get your wealth right, you want to get your mind right, you want to get your marriage right, you want to get your body right, your physical body, get in shape, you have to have something that you can be consistent with. Consistency is worth more than perfection. We are too hard on ourselves, and then we don't move forward because we think we need to be perfect. We imagine what we need to be, and then we don't even start because it seems too hard.
I think that's very true. Every week, I write down a 5 musts of the day, must of the week. And actually, I think you're right. The best advice is commit to doing less than you know you can do, because you'll do that. Every time I boil the kettle to make a cup of tea, I'm going, do some exercise. That can be one body squat. And you do when you go, I could totally do more than one body squat or one push-up. But if you don't do it, then you don't feel bad, because I think you're right. Our brains are very good at just searching for the negative. 1,000 things might happen to you in a day. You're going to focus on the 2 things that weren't perfect, not the 998 that went really well. That's the problem.
In my opinion, from my own studies, my own meditation on this and what was happening, how did I get myself out of that depression and out of that sickness and out of that wheelchair? I was housebound for a year. I didn't work. I wasn't social. I didn't drink alcohol. I didn't eat fast food. I cooked every one of my meals.
Yeah.
How do you get to that kind of monkish experience and get happy?
You didn't have a choice.
I did have a choice. I could have quit.
Yeah.
I could have just said, okay, give me the surgery, give me the drugs, put me on disability, mama, move them back in. That's what was told. And everyone out there, listen to this right now. If I had told the whole world that I give up or I quit and I'm just going to do what the reality that was being pushed on me, get the surgery, get on the drugs, get on disability, move back in with mom. And I told every best friend, every person ever in the world that was my reality because of an incurable disease I was diagnosed with, that was not my fault. Not one person would have blamed me or said, you should get up and try.
No, because that's what 99% of people would do.
Do you see what I'm saying? So right now, everyone was okay with me doing that.
Yeah.
That's the problem. What are you okay with? Everyone listening, what are you okay with? Stop playing defense and get offense. What do you want? Not what do you fear? When James says, well, I could do one more than one, it might even be based on fear. I should do at least one squat because I'll fear that I'll hate myself or be angry at myself or feel lazy or feel like I'm not moving forward if I don't put any effort into it. How do you change that? I need to go to the gym. 2, I want to go to the gym.
Yeah, I remember listening to a great podcast from Jordan Peterson, who said, it's not as much to have an image of where you want to go. You also have to have an image of where you don't want to be. So it's really important to think, in a year's time, I want to be earning X, feeling X, looking X. You've also got to have an image of how bad it will be if you do nothing. And I think it's important. So as much as being pushed, you're being pulled as well.
If you need help and you happen to have Crohn's colitis or IBS, first, I want to come with integrity and trust. Whoever you work with, make sure that you feel and believe that there's integrity there and that you can build trust with them. Because you want to be trusting and have integrity in a community. Healing is not linear. It is very difficult. And you can get great results very quickly, but it is a long-term community you want to be a part of. So make sure when you work with, there's integrity, there's trust, there's optimism, there's hope. that you have the ability to customize your life. Don't just pick up someone's flag and say, I'm going to be this or I'm going to be that. Like, you can build your life and continue to work out that canvas of happiness and canvas of truth and canvas of health. And so if you want to check us out, click the link in the show notes below. James, thank you so much for having me. It's crohnscolitislet.com. Click the link in the notes. We'll get you on a free strategy session.
I really hope you got something from this podcast. And if you're going through or have gone through a mental health issue and you found a way to make your life slightly easier and you want to share that story, please contact me. And I know it's a massive ask because no one's got any spare time, but I'm really trying to get this podcast out there. So if you have 2 minutes to leave me a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, that would be hugely appreciated. I hope wherever you are in the world, you're okay. Take care of yourself. My book, First Time Dad, A 42-Week Guide to Pregnancy, is available in Kindle and paperback form on Amazon and an audiobook form on Audible. To sign up for my monthly newsletter, please visit my website, www.dadmindmatters.com.